Okay, so I think you're good to go. For everybody. And this is going to look a little different. This probably some of these screens because this is I've got it set for all of us, so all of us are on the screen. I can see everybody that way. So, hello everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we're going to study paper 178, The Last Day at the Camp. This is not a super long paper, so we should be able to finish this completely tonight. And that starts on page 1929 of the original book and 178 on all the rest of them. Change the set up here, so I have to do it differently. Oops, that is not what I wanted to do. There we go. That's better. All right. Pam, you want to start out
Sure.
tonight?
Paper 178, Last Day at the Camp. Jesus planned to spend this Thursday, his last free day on earth, as a divine son incarnated in the flesh, with his apostles and a few loyal and devoted disciples. Soon after the breakfast hour on this beautiful morning, the master led them to a secluded spot a short distance above their camp, and there taught them many new truths. Although Jesus delivered other discourses to the apostles during the early evening hours of the day, this talk of Thursday afternoon was his farewell address to the combined camp group of apostles and chosen disciples, both Jews and Gentiles. The 12 were all present save Judas. Peter and several of the apostles remarked about his absence. And some of them thought Jesus had sent him into the city to attend to some matter, probably to arrange the details of their forthcoming celebration of the Passover. Judas did not return to the camp until mid-afternoon, a short time before Jesus led the 12 into Jerusalem to partake of the Last Supper.
So it's all coming to fruition, is it
Yeah,
not?
yeah.
Every time I read this paper, I think, well, we know what's coming, and it's sad. All right, discourse on sonship and citizenship. Jesus talked to about 50 of his trusted followers for almost 2 hours and answered a score of questions regarding the relation of the kingdom of heaven to the kingdoms of this world, concerning the relationship of sonship with God to citizen in earthly governments. This discourse, together with his answers to questions, may be summarized and restated in modern language as follows. Now, remember, they edited this so it makes sense to us in this day and time. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. The
Wait a
kingdom.
minute. Wait a minute, Rodney. Y'all are going to notice I don't have this in yellow, like I do the other things Jesus said, and the reason
Right.
being is it wasn't his direct word, it was paraphrased of what he said. So that's why
Okay.
it's not highlighted. Okay.
That's not a quote.
It's not a quote. That's right.
And the kingdoms of this world, being material, may often find it necessary to employ physical force in the execution of their laws and for the maintenance of order. In the kingdom of heaven, true believers will not resort to the employment of physical force. The kingdom of heaven, being a spiritual brotherhood of spirit-born sons of God, may be promulgated only by the power of the Spirit. This distinction of procedure refers to the relations are the kingdom believers in the kingdoms of secular government and does not nullify the right of social groups of believers to maintain order in their ranks and to administer discipline upon unruly and unworthy members.
So there's not going to be any police force in heaven, is there, in ancient worlds?
No.
None at all. It's not necessary because people behave themselves, right? And then it comes to Gary. Well, we don't know about Gary. I'm joking. Are you going to behave yourself when you get to the mansion world, Gary?
I'm going to have fun.
You're going Would you take the next one for us?
Yeah. There is nothing incompatible between sonship in the spirit kingdom and the citizenship in the secular or civil government. It is the believer's duty to render to Caesar the things which are Caesar's and to God the things which are God's. There cannot be any disagreement between these two requirements, the one being material and the other spiritual, unless it should develop that a Caesar presumes to usurp the
prerogatives. Yeah, prerogatives.
Yes, and dummy Gary, I can't say it. Okay, of God, and demand that spiritual homage and supreme worship be rendered to him. In such a case, you shall worship only God while you seek to enlighten such misguided earthly rulers and in this way lead them also into the recognition of the Father in heaven. You shall not render spiritual worship to earthly rulers, neither should you employ the physical forces of earthly governments, whose rulers may sometimes become believers in the work of furthering the mission of the spiritual kingdom.
That's exactly what the Catholic Church did, if you think about it. Now, there were lots of Caesars that assumed to be try to become gods also. And
You're trying to, were you referring to the Pope?
Yes, yeah. There's many Caesars that tried to get people to worship, you know. And the problem with Catholic Church is they tried to do that with the popes in Catholic Church, right?
Well, until the end of World War II, the Emperor of Japan was considered a god.
Yeah, that's
well,
true.
Same thing in North Korea now.
Yeah, it
Yes.
is. Same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pam, would you like to take the next one?
Yeah. Sonship in the kingdom, from the standpoint of advancing civilization, should assist you in becoming the ideal citizens of the kingdoms of this world, since brotherhood and service are the cornerstone of the gospel of the kingdom. The love call of the spiritual kingdom should prove to be the effective destroyer of the hate urge of the unbelieving and war-minded citizens of the earthly kingdoms. But these material-minded sons in darkness will never know of your spiritual light of truth unless you draw very near them with that unselfish social service which is the natural outgrowth of the bearing of the fruits of spirit in the life experience of each individual believer.
So
they don't really they don't really say more, like they don't give a for instance.
No, they don't, but it all boils down to service, doesn't it, to one another. And it's going to be really interesting, I'm sure, when we get to the first mansion world, because these people will wake up there that are still in this warmongering state of mind, right? So they'll have to go to the remedial classes to get to the point where they start actually to live spiritual life. And that might take, you know, hundreds of thousands of years just on the first mansion world, which is, you know, think about it. That's,
and I thought I was old now, huh?
Yeah, really. All right. I think I'm next.
I
As
think
mortals,
hey.
Pam just read, so I think I'm
Oh, I'm
next.
sorry.
As mortal and immaterial man, you are indeed citizens of the earthly kingdoms, and you should be good citizens. All the better for having become reborn spirit sons of the heavenly kingdom. As faith enlightened and spirit liberated sons of the kingdom of heaven, you face a double responsibility of duty to man and duty to God, while you voluntarily assume a third and sacred obligation, service to the brotherhood of all known believers. That's what I'm saying, is service, 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 right? Rodney, would you take the next one?
You may not worship your temporal rulers, and you should not employ temporal power in the furtherance of the spiritual kingdom, but you should manifest the righteous ministry of loving service to believers and unbelievers alike. In the gospel of the kingdom, there resides the mighty spirit of truth, and presently I will pour out the same spirit upon all flesh. The fruits of the spirit, your sincere and loving service, are the mighty social lever to uplift the races of darkness, and the spirit of truth will become your power multiplying fulcrum.
Well, that's how it spreads, right? It's interesting here that he says outright that that the kingdom should not be spread through the process of conquering. You see that in a sense?
Right. Would you say the process of what?
Conquering other
Oh.
religions. In other words, just what the Catholic Church tried to do by spreading the gospel as the Catholic Church going to war with all these other beings was exactly opposite of what it should have been doing, right? And it's the same way with the Muslims. When they go to war and want to kill everyone that's not a Muslim, they're making the same mistakes as the Catholics do.
Didn't Abraham try that?
He did. Abraham tried to wipe out every tribe that did not agree with what he thought. And we know that when he was coming back from one of those wipeout sessions, that's when Melchizedek stopped him from sacrificing his own son, right? So it's a perfect example how that does not work. So, okay, Gary, I think you're.
Display wisdom and exhibit
Sagacity.
sagacity in your dealings with unbelieving civil rulers by
Discretion. Discretion.
discretion. What's wrong with me today? Show yourself to be expert in ironing out minor disagreements and in adjusting trifling misunderstandings. In every possible way, in everything short of your spiritual allegiance to the rulers of the universe, seek to live peacefully with all men. Be you always as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. I didn't know snakes were smart.
I didn't either. Apparently they are.
Well, they slither.
They slither. That's right. There's a lot of people on this planet that slither around. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
Well, you should be made all the better citizens of the secular government as a result of becoming enlightened sons of the kingdom. So should the rulers of earthly governments become all the better rulers in civil affairs as a result of believing this gospel of the heavenly kingdom. The attitude of unselfish service of man and intelligent worship of God should make all kingdom believers better world citizens, while the attitude of honest citizenship and sincere devotion to one's temporal duty should help to make such a citizen the more easily reached by the spirit called to sonship in the heavenly kingdom.
All right, so becoming this sort of citizen should help you along, not only in this life, but in the life to come. So long as the rulers of earthly government seek to exercise the authority of religious dictators, you who believe this gospel can expect only trouble, persecution, and even death. But the very light which you, it's interesting how Jesus forewarns on exactly what's going to happen in the church. But the very light which you bear to the world, and even the very manner in which you will suffer and die for this gospel of the kingdom, will in themselves eventually enlighten the whole world and result in a gradual divorcement of politics and religion. They'll separate completely. The persistent preaching of the gospel of the kingdom will someday bring all nations a new and unbelievable liberation, intellectual freedom, and religious liberty. It's still happening. Okay, Roger.
Under the soon coming persecutions by those who hate this gospel of joy and liberty, you will thrive and the kingdom will prosper. But you will stand in grave danger in subsequent times when most men will speak well of the kingdom believers, and many in high places nominally accept the gospel of the heavenly kingdom. Learn to be faithful to the kingdom even in times of peace and prosperity. Tempt not the angels of your supervision to lead you in troublous ways as a loving discipline designed to save your ease-drifting souls.
Ease drifting, isn't that interesting? Way to put that. Gary, would you take the next one?
Remember that you are commissioned to preach this gospel of the kingdom. The supreme desire to do the Father's will, coupled with the supreme joy of the faith realization of sonship with God. And you must not allow anything to divert your devotion of this one duty. Let all mankind benefit from the overflow of your loving spiritual ministry, enlightening intellectual communion, and uplifting social service. But none of these humanitarian labors, nor all of them, should be permitted to take the place of proclaiming the gospel. These mighty ministrations are the social byproducts of the still more mighty and sublime ministrations and transformations wrought in the heart of the kingdom believer by the living spirit of truth and by the personal realization that faith of a spiritual born man confirms the assurance of living fellowship with the eternal God.
Isn't it interesting how the spirit of truth interacts so much with our lives, changes?
It makes you wonder how it was on earth back then before the Spirit of Truth.
Well, it had to be a lot more chaos and barbarians.
It must have been.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
we were
mean,
born into the Spirit of Truth.
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
So,
we're so fortunate and people don't realize.
it just made me think, which is unusual, that currently there's kind of a trend of being truth seekers. You hear that term on occasion.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is a manifestation of that. Is maybe it's a step forward.
I think so. I really believe that it's just a slow, progressive thing. All right. Pam, would you take the next one?
You must not seek to promulgate truth, nor to establish righteousness by the power of civil governments or by the inaction of secular laws. You may always labor to persuade men's minds, but you must never dare to compel them. You must not forget the great law of human fairness, which I have taught you in positive form. Whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do even so to them.
You see the difference in this and taking people to court and our justice system and all these things.
Right,
going
right. A
big
lot
difference.
to be dealt with.
Yeah, big difference, right? When a kingdom believer is called upon to serve the civil government, let him render such service as a temporal citizen of such a government. Albeit, such a believer should display in the civil service all ordinary traits of citizenship, as these have been enhanced by the spiritual enlightenment of the ennobling association of the mind of mortal man with the indwelling spirit of the eternal God. If the believer can qualify as a superior civil servant, he should seriously question whether the roots of truth in your heart have not died from the lack of the living waters of combined spiritual communion and social service. The consciousness of sonship with God should quicken the entire life service of every man, woman, and child who has become the possessor of such a mighty stimulus to all the inherent powers of the human personality. Notice in this paragraph, he talks about really the thought adjuster, right? That influence of God within us, not just the spirit of truth, but that influence of God within us makes a big difference, right? Right. Did you take the notes?
You are not to be passive mystics or colorless ascetics. You should not become dreamers and drifters, supinely trusting in a fictitious providence to provide even the necessities of life. You are indeed to be gentle in your dealings with erring mortals, patient in your intercourse with ignorant men, and forbearing under provocation. But you are also to be valiant in defense of righteousness, mighty in the promulgation of truth, and aggressive in the preaching of this gospel of the kingdom, even to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, that's pretty good instructions, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Gary, would you talk about that also?
Did you flip it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, you
Okay.
get the little one.
The gospel of the kingdom is a living truth. I have told you it is like the leaven of in the dough, like the grain of mustard seed, and now I declare that it is like the seed of the living being, which from generation to generation, while it remains the same living seed, unfailingly unfolds itself in new manifestations and grows acceptably in channels of new adaptations to the particular needs and conditions of each successive generation.
Wait a minute, Gary. I want to put something. That's peculiar needs and conditions. That's a
what did I say?
Particular.
Oh,
yeah, but it's definitely peculiar the way
okay.
each person.
It was peculiar how I said it.
Yeah.
The revelation I have made to you is a living revelation, and I desire that it shall bear appropriate fruits in each individual and in each generation in accordance with the laws of spiritual growth, increase, and adaptive development. From generation to generation, this gospel must show increasing validity and exhibit greater depth of spiritual power. It must not be permitted to become merely a sacrificed memory.
A sacred memory.
Sacred memory. That was strong on me.
Yeah.
A mere tradition about me and the time in which we now live.
And that's exactly what happened, isn't it? The
Yeah, they
teaching,
weren't listening.
no, they weren't listening. Jesus wanted to avoid this exact thing is the gospel about Jesus instead of the gospel of Jesus, right? Hey, would you take the next?
And forget not, we have made no direct attack upon the person or upon the authority of those who sit in Moses' seat. We only offered them the new light, which they have so vigorously rejected. We have assailed them only by the denunciation of their spiritual disloyalty to the very truths which they profess to teach this and safeguard. We clashed with these established leaders and recognized rulers only when they threw themselves directly in the way of the preaching of the gospel of the kingdom of the sons of men. And even now, it is not we who assail them, but they who seek our destruction. Do not forget that you are commissioned to go forth preaching only the good news. You are not to attack the old ways. You are skillfully to put the leaven of the new truth in the midst of the old beliefs. Let the Spirit of truth do his own work. Let controversy come only when they who despise the truth force it upon you. But when the willful unbeliever attacks you, do not hesitate to stand in vigorous defense of the truth which has saved and sacrificed you.
So we can't be,
Sanctify.
yeah, we can't be cowards, can we?
Right.
Throughout the vicissitudes of life, remember always to love one another. Do not strive with men, even with unbelievers. Show mercy even to those who despitefully abuse you. Show yourselves to be loyal citizens, upright artisans, praiseworthy neighbors, devoted kinsmen, understanding parents and sincere believers in the brotherhood of the Father's kingdom. And my spirit shall be upon you now and even to the end of the world. Right, Roger.
When Jesus had concluded his teaching, it was almost 1 o'clock, and they immediately went back to the camp where David and his associates had lunch ready for them.
The timing wasn't that. All right. Rodney, why don't you take the, that was really short. Take
Okay.
this one too.
Two, after the noontime meal, not many of the master's hearers were able to take even a part of his forenoon address. Of all who heard him, the Greeks comprehended most. Even the 11 apostles were bewildered by his allusions to future political kingdoms and to successive generations of kingdom believers. Jesus's most devoted followers could not reconcile the impending end of his earthly ministry with these references to an extended future of gospel activities. Some of these Jewish believers were beginning to sense that Earth's greatest tragedy was about to take place, but they could not reconcile such an impending disaster with either the master's cheerfully indifferent personal attitude or his forenoon discourse, wherein he repeatedly alluded to the future transactions of the heavenly kingdom extending over vast stretches of time and embracing relations with many and successive temporal kingdoms on earth.
It would be hard for them to imagine that he's talking about thousands of years, you know,
Yeah.
when he's talking about this stuff, right? Gary, read this really long one.
All righty, I'll stumble through it.
Okay.
By noon of this day, all the apostles and disciples had learned about the
Hey, stop.
hasty flight of Lazarus to from Bethany. They began to sense the grim determination of the Jewish rulers to exterminate Jesus and his teachings.
So they knew that they were in danger too, didn't they? Right? Right? Damn.
David Zebedee, through the work of his secret agents in Jerusalem, was fully advised concerning the progress of the plan to arrest and kill Jesus. He knew all about the part of Judas in his plot, and he never disclosed this knowledge to the other apostles nor to any of the disciples. Shortly after lunch, he did lead Jesus aside and, making bold, asked him whether he knew, but he never got further with his question. The master, holding up his hand, stopped him, saying, "Yes, David, I know all about it, and I know that you know, but to see it that you tell no man. Only doubt not in your own heart that the will of God will prevail in the end."
David knew what was coming too, didn't he? It's obviously well informed. This conversation with David was interrupted by the arrival of a messenger from Philadelphia bringing word that Abner had heard of the plot to kill Jesus and asking if he should depart for Jerusalem. The runner hastened off for Philadelphia with this word for Abner: "Go on with your work. If I depart from you in the flesh, it is only that I might return in spirit. I will not forsake you. I will be with you till the end." So he's telling me he knows what's coming, that Abner should continue on with his work, right? All right, Rodney.
About this time, Philip came to the master and asked, "Master, seeing that the time of the Passover draws nearer, where would you have us prepare to eat it?" And when Jesus heard Philip's question, he answered, "Go and bring Peter and John, and I will give you directions concerning the supper we will eat together this night. As for the Passover, that you will have to consider after we have first done this."
All right, so he wanted to, he was preparing for the Last Supper, wasn't he? Gary, would you take the next one?
When Judas heard the master speaking with Philip about these matters, he drew closer that he might overhear their conversation. But David Zebedee, who was standing near, stepped up and engaged Judas in conversation while Philip, Peter, and John went to one side to talk with the master.
So he didn't want him to hear about where the Last Supper was going to be, did he? Because he was afraid they would come and get him that very night. Pam, could you take the next one?
Said Jesus to the three, "Go immediately into Jerusalem, and as you enter the gate, you will meet a man bearing a water pitcher. He will speak to you, and then shall you follow him. When he leads you to a certain house, go in after him and ask of the good man of that house, 'Where is the guest chamber wherein the master is to eat supper with his apostles?' And when you have this thus inquired, this householder will show you a large upper room, all furnished and ready for us."
Now I'm going to quiz you on who knows who the father, whose father this man was.
I think it was the young kid.
John
John
Mark.
Marks.
John
It
Mark's
was
narrative.
Elijah Mark
Yeah.
that it's his house.
So I got it half right.
Well, you got it mostly right because that's exactly what I was asking.
Well, from when John Mark went with Jesus into the hills on Wednesday, they prearranged this.
When the apostles reached the city, they met the man with the water pitcher near the gate and followed on after him to the home of John Mark, where the lad's father met them and showed them the upper room in readiness for the evening meal. Rod.
And all this came to pass as a result of an understanding arrived at between the master and John Mark during the afternoon of the preceding day when they were alone in the hills. Jesus wanted to be sure he would have this one last meal undisturbed with his apostles, and believing if Judas knew beforehand of their place of meeting, he might arrange with his enemies to take him. He made the secret arrangement with John Mark. In this way, Judas did not learn of their place of meeting until later on when he arrived there in company with Jesus and the other apostles.
That's pretty wise, isn't it?
Yep.
Gary, would you take the next one?
David Zebedee had much business to transact with Judas so that he was easily prevented from following Peter, John, and Philip, as he so much desired to do. When Judas gave David a certain sum of money for provisions, David said to him, "Judas, might it not be well, under the circumstances, to provide me with a little money in advance of my actual needs?" And after Judas had reflected for a moment, he answered, "Yes, David, I think it would be wise. In fact, in view of the disturbed conditions in Jerusalem, I think it would be best for me to turn over all the money to you. They plot against the master, and in case anything should happen to me, you would not be hampered."
And it was him that was going to happen to him.
Basically, he was getting out of town.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting that he did that.
Yes, it is. You know, and you know, it shows that deep down inside, he still had some morals, right?
Yeah.
Even though he was fixing to betray his own master. Pam, would you take the next one, please?
And so David received all the apostolic cash funds and receipts for all money on deposit. Not until the evening of the next day did the apostles learn of this transaction.
It was about a half past 4 o'clock when the three apostles returned and informed Jesus that everything was in readiness for the supper. The master immediately prepared to lead his 12 apostles over the trail to the Bethany Road and on into Jerusalem. And this was the last journey he ever made with all 12 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. There's a picture of Jerusalem and where they actually are. Okay. Rodney.
Okay. You need to switch the screen.
No, this is
the map. There we go. Three. On the way to the supper, seeking again to avoid the crowds passing through the Kidron Valley back and forth between Gethsemane Park and Jerusalem, Jesus and the 12 walked over the western brow of Mount Olivet to meet the road leading from Bethany down to the city. As they drew near the place where Jesus had tarried the previous evening to discourse on the destruction of Jerusalem, they unconsciously paused while they stood and looked down in silence upon the city. As they were a little early, and since Jesus did not wish to pass through the city until after sunset, he said to his associates,
"Here's.
Sit down and rest yourselves while I talk with you about what must shortly come to pass. All these years I have lived with you as brethren, and I have taught you the truth concerning the kingdom of heaven, and have revealed to you the mysteries thereof. And my father has indeed done many wonderful works in connection with my mission on earth. You have been witnesses of all this and partakers in the experience of being laborers together with God. And you will bear me witness that I have for some time warned you that I must presently return to the work the Father has given me to do. I have plainly told you that I must leave you in the world to carry on the work of the kingdom. It was for this purpose that I set you apart in the hills of Capernaum. The experience you have had with me, you must now make ready to share with others. As the Father sent me into this world, so I am about to send you forth to represent me and finish the work I have begun.
Pretty much a straightforward charge, isn't it? Okay. Pam, did you take the notes?
You look down on yonder city in sorrow, for you have learned my words telling of the end of Jerusalem. I have forewarned you lest you should perish in her destruction, and so delay the proclamation of the gospel of the kingdom. Likewise, do I warn you to take heed lest you needlessly expose yourselves to peril when they come to take the Son of Man? I must go, but you are to remain to witness to the gospel, to this gospel, when I have gone, even as I directed that Lazarus flee from the wrath of man, that he might live to make known the glory of God. If it is the Father's will that I depart, nothing you may do can frustrate the divine plan. Take heed to yourselves, lest they kill you also. Let your souls be valiant in defense of the gospel by spirit power, but be not misled into any foolish attempt to defend the Son of Man. I need no defense by the hand of man. The armies of heaven are even now near at hand, but I am determined to do the will of my Father in heaven, and therefore must we submit to that which is so soon to come upon us.
144,000 pairs of angels, something like that, right? I think they could defend them pretty good. When you see this city destroyed, forget not that you have entered already upon the eternal life and endless service in the ever-advancing kingdom of heaven, even of the heavens of heavens. You should know that my Father's universe and in mine are many abodes, and that there awaits the children of light the revelation of cities whose builder is God and whose worlds, whose habit of life is righteousness and joy in the truth. I have brought the kingdom of heaven to you here on earth, but I declare to you that to all of you who by faith enter therein and remain thereby, the living service of truth shall surely ascend to these worlds on high and sit with me in the spiritual kingdom of the Father. But first, must you gird yourself and complete the work which you have begun with me? You must first pass through such much tribulation and to endure many sorrows, and these trials are even now upon us. And when you have finished your work on earth, you shall come to my joy, even as if I have finished my Father's work on earth and am about to return to his embrace. So he's flatly telling him that they need to try to save themselves so they can do the work of God, right? Rodney.
When the master had spoken, he arose, and they all followed him down Olivet into the city. None of the apostles, save three, knew where they were going as they made their way along the narrow streets in the approaching darkness. The crowds jostled them, but no one recognized them, nor knew that the Son of God was passing by on his way to the last mortal rendezvous with his chosen ambassadors of the kingdom. And neither did the apostles know that one of their own number had already entered into a conspiracy to betray the master into the hands of his enemies.
Well, nobody knew nothing yet, right? Gary.
John Mark had followed them all the way to the city, and after they had entered the gate, he hurried on by another street so that he was waiting to welcome them to his father's home when they arrived.
He was fast.
He was fast. He wanted to get there before they did, right? And next time we will be reading The Last Supper, right?
Good paper.
Good paper. All right, let me stop the sharing. And surely, American acceptance. There we go. We'll see the prayer. We
Who is
go.
it, Pam?
I wasn't here last Thursday, so who read Thursday?
Roger.
Okay, Roger, it's and Rodney, I think you read before.
Yes.
Yeah. So Gary, it's your turn.
Okay, the prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God, and know that all men and women were my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe in Lebanon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, by allowing the will of God to become my will. I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
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 All right, y'all. That was a good paper, wasn't
Yeah.
it? Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome, and we'll plan on doing the Last Supper on Thursday.
Okay, cool.
And we'll see everybody, and thank you, everybody at home who comes and listens to us and shares us with others. We appreciate it. And we will hope to see you Thursday. Love you guys. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
You're
Good
welcome.
night.
Good night.